Well, good morning. My name is Ken Boney, and I have been a part of this community here at Capitol for about 3.5 years. And I am excited today to share with you a little bit about God's story and a little bit about my story. But before I do so, could I share a moment of transparency with you guys? Would that be okay? All right. For years and years and years, I've been terrified of public speaking. And I can remember that every time I was going to have to get in front of any size of group to speak, I would pray that God would just rapture us all right then. And I thought I had it dialed in this weekend, that I was good to go. But fortunately, I prepared something, so... All right. Well, let's just dive in. Back in 1989, 1990, there was an athlete that was making huge headlines, an athlete by the name of Vincent Edward Jackson, better known as Bo Jackson. Maybe some of you guys will remember him. You know, it's the rare athlete that will be good at two sports in high school, that might star in a couple of sports. And there's even fewer athletes that will go on to play college ball at that Division I college level. But Bo was so good that not only was he able to play sports at the highest level at the major leagues, he was the first person ever to be voted a Major League All-Star baseball player and an NFL Pro Bowler. So Bo was amazing. Some of his feats include this. In the 1989 Major League Baseball All-Star game, Bo leads off the bottom of the first inning, and he hits this rocket over the center field fence, 448 feet. I still remember seeing that on TV. At the NFL Combine, Bo was timed running a 4.12 second 40-yard dash, still the fastest 40-yard dash ever timed at the NFL Combine. Bo was amazing. And to capitalize on his popularity and what was happening, the shoe company Nike decided they'd start this commercial campaign. Maybe you guys remember it, the Bo Knows campaign. And they would say, Bo Knows baseball, Bo Knows football, Bo Knows soccer, Bo Knows fishing. I mean, Bo was just amazing. And so I wanted to share a clip with you guys, one of those Bo Knows commercials. This clip that we're going to show was aired for the very first time right after that inning where he hit that 448-foot home run. Let's take a look.
Bo Knows baseball. Bo Knows football. Bo Knows basketball, too. Bo Knows tennis?
No.
Bo Knows weight.
Bo, you don't know diddly.
So Bo, an amazing athlete. He knew a lot, but he didn't know diddly. Anyhow, today, we are going to talk about something much more important than knowing football, soccer, baseball. We're going to talk about how God knows, and not how God knows just those things, but how God knows each one of you. And so we're going to take a look at Psalm 139. But before we do that, would you guys bow your heads with me and pray, and we'll invite God to speak. Father, I know that as we sit here, every one of us is at different places on this spiritual journey, God. Some of us have known you for a long time. Some of us don't know if you're true. Some of us might just be getting to know you. But God, I pray that you would communicate your love today, your love and your desire to know each one of us, and that it would impact each and every one of us. I ask these things in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen. All right, so we're going to look at Psalm 139. This psalm is attributed to David. And if you guys remember, David was a king, and he was frequently chased. He was chased by Saul. He was chased by his son Absalom. And it's believed that this psalm was written in a time of distress when he was being pursued and he had these people after him. And so this is a prayer that he's praying. And Psalm 139, verse 1 begins, Oh, Lord, you have searched me and you know me. Throughout this psalm, we're going to hear how much God knows each one of us and how much he cares. And then in verse 2, he says, you know when I sit and when I rise, you perceive my thoughts from afar. These words sit and rise, they actually form what's called a merism. It's a rhetorical device. They're supposed to be two opposite extremes. You know when I'm sitting down, God, and you know when I rise, and you know everything I'm doing in between. So it indicates he knows these two opposites and everything else that you're doing. So this God knows our actions. He knows our thoughts. He knows our words. He knows our fears and insecurity. He knows you better than you know yourself. And that can either be really comforting or really scary, can it? And then in verse 3, it says, you discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. You know, he knows when the alarm goes off in the morning and you drag yourself out of bed. He knows when your head hits the pillow at night and you start to drool. Anybody wake up in that pool? Ugh. Anyways, I used to work with this lady. She was a cowgirl. And she would talk about how she and her husband had completely different attitudes towards morning. She said she'd wake up every morning and say, good morning, Lord. And she's got a smile on her face. Her husband would wake up in the morning and say, good Lord, it's morning. And so God knows all of our attitudes and all of our actions. He cares about what's going on in our lives. And then in verse 4, it says this, before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely, O Lord. Before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely, O Lord. I don't know how many times I wish God would have just stopped me before I said it. You know what I'm saying? But he knows what we're going to say. And our words, they have so much power, don't they? They've got the power to lift up or tear down. They've got the power to encourage or discourage. They've got the power to keep a promise, to keep a relationship solid, or to break that relationship and destroy it. Our words have so much power, and the Bible is full of just of information on how important our words are. One of my favorite verses is Ephesians 4:29, and it says this, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building up others according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. That's good advice, isn't it? I mean, really, wouldn't it be great if we all just kind of spoke kind things and we didn't say anything that was mean or cruel? And in practicality, it sounds really good, and we all kind of buy into that. Yeah, there's a lot of wisdom in those words. However, it's not that easy all the time, is it? Jesus addresses this in Luke 6:45. He says, a good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. It makes sense, doesn't it? Wherever our hearts are at. You know, if you struggle with your words, if you struggle with ripping on your spouse or tearing down your kids, or if you're constantly in judgment of your coworkers and you have a tendency to snap at them, or you look at everybody else and you judge them and you criticize them, I would encourage you so strongly to ask God, say, God, I know that I struggle in this area. I know that my words don't bring life, but they bring death. And I want my words to bring life and encouragement. And ask him on a daily basis, God, help me in this area. Help me to speak words that are more loving and more grace-filled. Because I know that the more in step that we are with God, the more we exist in his presence and his love resides in our life, and we believe that and we own that, the more grace-filled our words are, the more loving our words are, the more kind our words are, the more that we give life. And then in verse 5, it says this, you hem me in. Behind me, or behind and before, you have laid your hand upon me. You hem me in. When I first read this, I thought, how restrictive. God's got his hand here and his hand here, and I can't get out. You know, none of us wants to be caged in, do we? But then as I thought about this verse, I was reminded of a trip we took to California this last Christmas. That's where I'm from, and we spend a day going up to Hollywood. You know, the Walk of Fame, where all the stars are at, and Grauman's Chinese Theater? Well, there were people everywhere. The streets were busy with cars zooming by. The sidewalks were packed with people. I mean, there's tourists everywhere. And every time we would come to an intersection, I would grab my four-year-old son Reese's hand, and I would hold on to it, and I would hem him in. I wasn't letting him go anywhere. And you know why? Because I knew the dangers. I knew what could happen if he stepped in front of that car. I knew what could happen, and he didn't. But because I loved him, I held on to him. I hemmed him in. In the same way, I believe God hems us in. And then in verse 6, David says this, "Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain." As we look at this psalm, it's actually divided into about four sections. And these first six verses talk about how God knows all about us, how he loves us, how he's always with us, how he cares about us, how he knows our words and our thoughts. And David just pauses and he says, "This is too lofty for me to attain. I can't even understand this. I'm totally blown away by how this God knows me. He knows me better than myself." In Matthew 10:30, it even says this, "And even the hairs of your head are all numbered." He cares so much that he knows how many hairs you have on your head. Outside of the ones that are married to somebody who's bald, I doubt anybody knows the number of hairs on their spouse's head, right? You know, I love my wife dearly, but I'm never counting, okay? But this God is so intimate and so personal that he cares. He's numbered the hairs on our head. So God knows. God knows me, and he cares about all of this stuff. The actions I take, how I spend my day, what my thoughts are, what dangers I face, what issues I have, what struggles I have. God knows, and he cares. And then the psalm goes in a little bit different direction. The prayer continues, not focusing just on how God knows, but how he is always with us. Wherever we go, he's inescapable. He's with us everywhere and all the time. In verse 37, it says, "Where can I flee, or where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence, God?" He's always there. Verse 8, "If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there." You know, if I'm on the space shuttle and I go to outer space, God is there with me. If I'm in the depths, God is with me. I was reminded of those Chilean miners who spent 69 days a half mile underground buried. And I thought, man, how terrifying would that have been? How alone? Do you think some of those people maybe struggled to believe that God was there and he cared for them? But if you read that story and you read into it, prayer and God was a huge part of that. And I know God was with them every moment of that time. His presence was there with them. You know, and this really talks to the physical, this verse about the physical extremes, but I think it applies to the emotional as well. You know how sometimes everything's going right in life? You know, I've won the championship. I'm dating the person I want to date. I've got a great marriage. My kids are succeeding. My job is going well. I'm doing awesome in school. And everything seems to be going right. We tend to kind of forget about God during those times. For whatever reason, we forget about him. But he's always there with us. And the opposite is true as well. There's those times in our life where we are in the depths, we're in despair, and we feel like nobody knows our pain. Nobody knows our struggles. Nobody knows our issues. Maybe I've just been broken up with, or I'm going through a divorce. Maybe I've lost a loved one. And I feel like nobody understands. I'm so lonely. But God is there. He's there every moment, and he cares. He's right there with you, and he wants you to know that. And then verse 9 and 10. It says, "If I rise on the wings of dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast." You know, back in these times, these guys didn't have satellites or airplanes or anything. They had, their whole concept was physically that sun is rising in the east, and that's as far as I can imagine. And I've got the Mediterranean Sea out to the west, and I can't imagine anything past the ocean out there. And yet they're saying, no matter how far I go east, no matter how far I go west, and everywhere in between, God is with me. I grew up in Southern California, went to the beach a lot as a kid, spent a lot of time in the ocean. But I always had a fear and respect for the ocean. And every now and again, I'd read about or see a news story about somebody setting off on a sailing trip to go around the world solo in a sailboat. And I thought, man, that has got to be about the most lonely thought in the world, to be out 1,000 miles into the ocean, nobody around, no Starbucks, no 7-Eleven. Yeah, I mean, just completely alone. And yet this tells us that God is with us. He's with them on that sailboat. He's with you wherever you're at. Romans 8, 38 and 39 says this, "For I am convinced that neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither the present nor the future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord." There is absolutely nothing that can separate us from God. He's there with us. And then in verse 11, it says this, "If I say, surely the darkness will hide me, and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like day, for the darkness is as light to you." You know, I don't know what it is about, well, I probably do know what it is about sin and crime and everything, but doesn't it seem like most of that stuff happens at night or in the dark? We feel like darkness will conceal us, darkness will hide us. And in some instances it does, but from God it never does. As a child, teenager, whatever, we would play hide-and-go-seek in our neighborhood. And we always waited till after dark. You know why? Because it was more fun, because I could hide better, because it was harder to find people. But darkness doesn't conceal anything from God. It says, you know, the Bible in Revelation 21, it actually says that God himself is light, that he illuminates the new earth, that he himself is light. And there's something about bringing our sin and our issues into the light. You know, every recovery program that you ever hear, the 12 steps, celebrate recovery, what's the very first step towards recovery? Admitting that you've got an issue, admitting that there's a problem. And what are you doing there? I'm bringing that issue into the light. I'm exposing it to others. I'm not keeping it. Then the loneliness goes away. The darkness that surrounds that goes away because I bring it into the light. And what happens at that moment? The moment you tell other people about that issue, it loses its power over you in some way. You are no longer as lonely as you were. You no longer believe that you're the only person that struggles with this. So God says, bring it in the light, and that he is light. So I just, whatever's going on in your life, wherever you're at with stuff, it's not hidden from God. God knows, but he cares, and he loves you, and he wants you to have victory over it. Hebrews 4:13 says, "Nothing in all creation is hidden from God's sight. Everything is uncovered and laid bare before the eyes of him to whom we must give account." So nothing we do is hidden from this God. Not darkness, not distance. You can't get away from it. He knows it all, but he knows and he cares, and he wants to redeem, and he wants to save, and he wants to help, and he wants to give guidance. So God knows. God knows whether you're in a pit or in the wilderness. Regardless of what's going on in your life, God knows he's always with you every step of the way, and he wants to lift you up and pull you out of it. So a couple months ago, Troy asked me if I would speak this weekend because he knew he had a trip to California, and he's out of town right now. And when he asked me to speak, he said, "Ken, you can speak on anything you want." Well, almost anything. It did have to have something to do with the Bible and Christianity, I think. He doesn't give me that much leeway. But when he said that, I chose Psalm 139 right away. And the main reason is for these next six verses and the impact that they've had on my life and my wife's life and what they've meant to us. Let me tell you a little bit about my wife, Vicky. She and I met about 13 years ago, and we fell in love. Aww. But she grew up in South Dakota. She grew up on a farm. Part of her life was picking rock. Hardy folk, windy, cold area, if you're familiar with South Dakota at all. I would call her a hardy soul. And during her high school years, she actually was a two-sport athlete. She starred in both basketball and in track. And as a matter of fact, her maiden name was Beaver, and her nickname is Beave to this very day. So you could technically say Beave knows, right? Beave knows basketball. Beave knows track. She said she never got the shoe contract, though. That would have worked out good for us. But anyhow, she was a gal that just didn't let much ruffle her feathers. You know, she was kind of a tomboy, not much bothered her. But when we fell in love and we got engaged, something started to happen inside of her. These insecurities started to develop. And she'd hear these voices, and I don't mean like audible voices, but, you know, you're not good enough. Ken's going to find somebody more attractive. This marriage is not going to work. You're not worthy of this. She's prettier than I am. And there were these thoughts that would come in her mind. And what would result from that is she literally, for 2 or 3 days, would kind of get in a funk, you know, where it's just like I couldn't say anything to cheer her up. You know, and I'm a guy. I want to fix everything, right? So I'm like, honey, I love you. Honey, this is not true. I'll be with you forever. You're awesome. I'm so glad to be with you. But it wouldn't make it go away. And I can remember after we got married, one night we were in our house in the living room, and we both got down on our knees on the couch or in front of the couch, and we prayed and we literally cried to God, please take these feelings away. Make these lies go away. Please, God. I mean, this was hard on our marriage. You know, we're like, is this the way life's going to be all the time? But he didn't take that away right away. And it was through a number of things in her life. Good friends who followed Christ. A couple Bible studies, actually by Beth Moore. One called Believing God and one called Breaking Free. So that is a shameless plug for the Beth Moore conference on August 26th and 27th. But I mean, literally, what she learned through that and memorizing these next 6 verses and really not only memorizing them but believing them gave her victory and us victory over those feelings and thoughts so that we now have a healthy, happy, fun, loving marriage. And so with that, let's take a look at this next piece as God describes how he created us. Verse 13 says, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb." So God did the knitting. He did the creating. He put us together in his mother's womb. He created us just the way he wants us to be. And then verse 14 says this, "I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well." You heard Suzanne talk about that verse during the worship time. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. As I was preparing for this sermon, I read some information by a Bible commentator by the name of Derek Kidner. And he says that first part where it says, "I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made," could legitimately be translated in Hebrew to read, "I praise thee for I am awesomely wonderful." How cool is that? I am awesomely wonderful. And then he said that latter half of this verse where it says, "I know that full well," that could be translated to say, "And my soul knows it very well." So if I run that all together, "I praise thee for I am awesomely wonderful. Your works are wonderful and my soul knows it very well." Does your soul know very well that God created you and that he loves you? That he fearfully and what he awesomely made you? Think about how that would change your perspective. Think about the impact, as my wife believed that and I believed that, that it had on our marriage. And then in verse 15 and 16, "My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place. When I was woven together in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed body." And then in verse 16, "All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be." You know, God knows every day, every moment. He's always there with us. He's intensely personal, cares about each and every piece of our life. And then in verse 17 and 18, it says, "How precious to me are your thoughts, O God, how vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand." His thoughts are so precious and so numerous, they would outnumber the grains of sand. And then in verse 18, "When I awake, I am still with you." And so what this is saying is that, God, your thoughts are so precious to me. And were I to try to count them, I would fall asleep counting them. However, when I awake, you're still with me. How cool is that? He's still with me. And his thoughts are precious about us. You know, God knows. God knows every detail. God knows what's going on in our life. He is always with us. He created us. And by believing these verses, by my wife and I both believing these verses, that we're fearfully and wonderfully made, that God, his thoughts of us are precious, that he knitted us together in our mother's womb, that he created us. That was life-changing. That was impactful. And this is what God says to you and I. You know how when a parent will first have a little baby, how that baby's first born, that little infant, and they look at him, and they're really not that cute. I mean, if you've seen a newborn baby, they're really not that cute. But what does mom see? What does dad see? They're overwhelmed with love. They see beauty. They see potential. And they just have this overwhelming love. And I believe that the God that we love and serve has even a greater love for us than we do for that newborn child. And I think that's how God looks at each one of us. I was at a seminar about 4 years ago, and there was an author by the name of Ken Blanchard. He wrote The 1 Minute Manager, Gung Ho. He's written a lot of business books, and he describes himself now as a Christ follower. And he was kind of just talking about his business success, but how he all attributed it all to God. And then he said, as he was kind of addressing each one of us, he said this quote that has hung with me ever since then. He said, "God doesn't make any junk, and he made you." What would it mean to hang on to that? God doesn't make any junk, and he made you. You see, God knows you like no one else, and he loves you, and he wants you to know that. Then the psalm takes what appears to be an abrupt turn. I mean, it's like I'm reading along, we're in happy land, you know, God knows me, he's with me all the time, he created me, I'm feeling pretty good about this. But then in verse 19, David says this, "If only you would slay the wicked, O God, away from me, you bloodthirsty men." And in verse 20, "They speak of you with evil intent. Your adversaries misuse your name." And then in verse 21, "Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? Abhor those who rise up against you?" And then in verse 22, "I have nothing but hatred for them. I count them my enemies." And as I read this, I was like, whoa. I was appalled. I thought, you know, we don't even allow our kids to use the word hatred in our house. Hatred is not something that we want to be part of our family. I mean, hate's kind of an ugly feeling. But then as I got to thinking about these verses more and more, and I thought about the times in my life where somebody has come up against my wife or my children or my parents or my brothers, and they wanted to treat them unjustly or wrongly, the only way I could describe the feeling that would boil up in me was hate. I mean, I hated anybody that wanted to hurt them. And as I thought about this, I was reminded of a time when I was in college, and one of my brothers was at a party. It was a dance. He goes to this party, and he kind of gets into it with this guy, just bantering back and forth. And as he does, he actually kind of walked away from the situation, goes back on the dance floor. And a little bit later, he's surrounded by four guys. And he gets in a fight with one of these guys. Turns out the guy was a black belt in karate. The guy gets my brother in a headlock and starts just pounding his face. He broke his nose, pushed his teeth through his lower lip. I wasn't around for any of this, didn't know what was going on. I got home later that night. My brother was in bed. He'd been to the hospital. And I heard this story. And all I can say is I wanted to get this guy. I wanted vengeance. I wanted a chance to go after him. I'm like, this is not right. You don't hurt my brother like this. And the feeling was hatred. Yet as we look at this verse and we look at what David said, if we go back to verse 19, we'll find that David actually leaves justice in God's hand. He says, if only you would slay the wicked, O God. Away from me, you bloodthirsty men. You know, as I think about it, Jesus, his whole message was, love your enemies, forgive those who hurt you. And we are instructed to do that. And I believe that, you know, vengeance is an ugly cycle, right? We get into vengeance, it's just like, okay, I did this, and now you got to do this, and I got to do this, and it just gets worse and worse. But Jesus says, love your enemies, forgive those who have hurt you. And David actually leaves justice back in God's hands. As you look at David's life, when he was chased by Saul, he never rose up against him. He trusted God. When he was chased by his son Absalom, he never rose up against him. He left justice in God's hands. And I believe that these four verses here are less about David's spite for somebody than they are about his zeal and love for God. And just like that, I have that love for my family where I would rise up against somebody who came against them. But that's out of love. It's not out of a life of hatred. So we need to leave that in God's hands. And then the psalm ends by David saying this. He says, search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. And then in verse 24, he says, see if there is any offensive way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. Now, wait a minute. Didn't the first 18 verses of this psalm say that God knows me? He's always with me. He created me. And now I'm saying, search me, O God. Oh, but that's not what it's about, is it? It's not about God knowing you. It's about God revealing those things that are in your life that He needs to work on for you. You know, if we put this back in context, this was a prayer, right? And David was in distress. And he says, God, you know me. I mean, think about this. You're being chased. Maybe you're being persecuted. Maybe you're hiding in a foxhole. And these people are after me. And during that time, David's praying, God knows me. You are always with me. You created me, and I'll stand up against anyone who comes against you. And in light of that, he says, after all that, as he goes through this anger mode, he says, search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. You know, what he's doing here is he's asking God to search his heart and to reveal those bad motives. You know, those places where I think I'm right, but I'm wrong. The places where I don't believe in myself, but God believes in me. You know, he's asking him to reveal the lies, reveal the rebellious, unloving characteristics that he has. And he's asking him to be with him, to show him those areas where, God, I don't trust you enough. I don't love you enough. Please, God, work in those areas in my life. And really, this should be our prayer. This should be our prayer and our request to God. That we would ask him, show us those areas, Lord, that do not look like you. Show you those areas where I don't trust you. Show me those areas where I don't love others. Show me those areas where I have offensive ways and I want vengeance. And you tell me not to go after vengeance, but to love my enemies. You know, God knows. God knows everything going on in our lives. And why is it so important that God knows? Why is it so important? How important is it that a child knows that their parent knows them? How important is it that a child knows that their parent loves them? You know, every one of us in our being has this desire to know others and to be known. Every one of us has a desire to belong and to be loved. And God, He knows you. He knows you because He loves you. He knows you because you're His creation, you're His child, and He wants to know you, and He cares. He wants to comfort you. You know, I said early on that God knows us better than we know ourselves quite frequently. And how many of us want to somebody to just kind of get us, that understands us? So frequently in our lives, we just feel like nobody gets me. Nobody understands what I'm going through. Nobody knows my challenges. Some of those areas we want to hide from other people, or we do hide from other people. But God knows, and He cares, and He loves you, and He wants to be there and comfort you and encourage you. He loves you, so He knows. Let's pray. God, You promise us so many things in Your Word. And so frequently we struggle to believe what You say. We believe the lies of the enemy. We believe the lies of friends. Yet You love each and every one of us. You care about where we're at and what's going on in our lives. Regardless of how deep the hole is that we're in, You're with us every step of the way. Lord, I pray that each one of us would know You more, know Your love, and trust in You, God. I'm so grateful for these verses, for these promises that I'm fearfully and wonderfully made, that no matter what's going on in my life, You are there with me, that You know me better than anybody. You know me better than I know myself. God, I pray that I would absorb that and embrace that, and because of it, just follow You with all the more passion. I pray for each one of us on our journey, God, wherever we're at with God, that we would take a step closer to You today. I pray these things in the name of Jesus. Amen.